You're listening to Central Time. I'm Veronica Rickert.
And I'm Rob Ferret. The history of autism has been told in fractured pieces over the decades. With the new book, In a Different Key, the pieces come together to give a more complete picture of autism and how society has grown to understand the condition itself and the people who have it, from the story of case number one to the present day.
Karen Zucker joins us now. She's a producer and journalist for ABC News and the PBS NewsHour. She's the co-author with John Donvan of In a Different Key, The Story of Autism. Karen, welcome to Central Time.
Hi, thanks so much for having me.
So to start at the beginning, we have to go back before that first diagnosed case of autism in 1943. Tell us a little bit about the argument that autism isn't new, isn't a surge, that it's actually been around for centuries.
Well, we believe, and we can't say conclusively because you can never do that about history, that autism has been with us for centuries. And there are many stories that we reported on, people like the Holy Fools who walked around and had very similar characteristics. They were called the Holy Fools then, to people with autism. And we had one particular, Samuel Howell, Gridley Howell, did a legislative research through Massachusetts, and he studied all of the people who were called at the time idiots. And he saw in his work that there were caseloads of people who didn't fit the qualifications for what would define an idiot, so to speak, which is what people with developmental disabilities were called at the time. That wasn't an insult then. It was the definition. And you know, some of the cases he found had strikingly similar characteristics to people with autism. There was this one 56-year-old man named Billy who would repeat over and over again, time to milk the cows, time to milk the cows. We now know repeating over and over as a form of echolalia. He knew how to milk the cows, but he couldn't communicate it other than in repetitive ways. He also had perfect pitch, which is something we know is not unusual with people with autism. So there were many, many cases that that Samuel Howell found that would have today very likely been diagnosed as autism.
And in the modern day, to get to that first actual diagnosis using the word autism, we go to the story of a boy named Donald Triplett and his mother, Mary, and they were working, it sounds like, with a psychiatrist named Leo Kanner. What happened there? How did they get connected, all of those people?
Well, Mary Triplett and her husband, they knew there was something wrong with their son. And in fact, when he was 3 years old, they sent him, like many parents did, almost all parents of those generations, they sent him to an institution because parents were told to put your child away, forget you ever had them, and take care of the rest of your family. There was no place to send them to school, and that was what even someone like Dr. Spock advised in those days. And Mary Triplett, after having Donald at this place called the Privatorium for almost a year, decided, you know, I can't give up that easily. And actually, it was Beeman Triplett who wrote Dr. Kanner a 30-page letter describing all of the nuances of his son, Donald. And Dr. Kanner, after observing Donald, it took almost four years for him to really figure out what it was. It was something he had never seen before, and until he got 11 cases, he did not diagnose anything, and that's when he came up with the term autism. And Donald T. was his very first case, and we're actually now friends with Donald, and we've been visiting down in Forest since 2007, and he's an extraordinary example of a success story.
He's in his 80s now, right?
Yeah, he's 82 years old, and he has autism. He still has autism, but he lives an independent life. He learned how to drive his car. His mother taught him how to drive a car when he was 27 years old. He travels around the world. For many, many years, he worked at the family bank. But the key, we think, to Donald was that he grew up in a community that embraced him. And they embraced him because they didn't treat him as if he was different from anyone else. And they were very protective of him. And John and I, my co-author, John Donvan, and I like to think if we could bottle what they did in Mississippi, the world would be a much, much kinder place to everybody who's different.
It's interesting that he ended up such a success story, as you say, because after that relationship with Dr. Connor got established, he had a theory that could have been damaging to the mother-son relationship, at least. He said that the autism happened because of maternal coldness, and he wasn't the only one to end up saying that. How did he wind up on that for a cause?
Well, Dr. Connor, I think what happened is originally he saw that it was something innate, and I don't know if it was for greed or for popularity, but that wasn't taking off. And at some point, he sort of turned his tune and said, well, maybe, you know, it's because I'm meeting all these parents. They're all intellectuals. They're not connected to their children. You know, maybe it is because their mothers are cold, frozen, like in a refrigerator. And that was quoted in the Time magazine. And that took off like crazy. And in fact, Bruno Bettelheim, who called himself a psychiatrist or psychologist, but was really only had his PhD in art history, took that theme and really for decades and decades, mothers were told they were responsible for their child's autism. And the reason a child had autism was because their mother didn't love their child enough. And Bruno Bettelheim is really the person who hammered that home. And when you think about how insane that is, how these parents and especially these mothers who were doing everything humanly possible to try to help their child, and now they're being told, it's your fault because you didn't love them enough. We tell this one story in the book where this mother whose son is finally diagnosed with autism and she knew something was wrong with him, in order to get him into a program, and there were very few at the time because this is the 60s, she had to be open to psychoanalysis of her so that she could figure out what she did wrong to cause her child's autism. And this was a mother who was educated. And because she was educated, she had read the books by Bruno Bettelheim. So she thought, it has to be my fault. It must be my fault. And then one day in this psychologist's office, she says, oh, I know exactly what it is. You know, my son, when he first came home, he had jaundice, you know, he was yellow, and his hair stuck up, and he looked like a chicken. And I must have not loved him enough because I thought he looked like a chicken. This is what happened to these parents. It was tragic because it was tragedy on top of families doing everything humanly possible to try to help their children be part of the world.
We're talking with Karen Zucker right now. She's a producer and journalist for ABC News and the PBS NewsHour, and she's a co-author with John Donvan of In a Different Key, The Story of Autism. And you were talking there about what mothers went through, and there was a mother who finally said, you know what, this isn't right, and I'm not going to take this. I'm going to try to change things. One of the first kind of autism activists, Ruth Sullivan. Tell us about her.
Yeah, Ruth, not for a minute did she think it was her fault. You know, she had 9 other children, and she said, if it was my fault, why are the rest of my children fine? And she set out to not only, her fight wasn't about not being responsible, not worrying about if it was her fault or not. Her struggle with that was that she felt that psychologists and psychiatrists weren't doing anything to help the cause if they were blaming mothers and they were wasting all this time. So what she did is she decided she needed to organize and create a situation so that families who had children with autism could get together and try to literally change the world, and they did. They started the Autism Association of America and in 1964 with Dr. Bernard Wimlin, and it was the first organization in the United States that fought for education for their children and helping to close down institutions. She really made a huge difference in the world for parents today.
How were things changing at that time? So this was in the 60s when Ruth was organizing and trying to effect change, but how were children with autism being treated in the schools? How were they seen in society then?
Well, children were, it was literally the law that you, if you had autism, you were prohibited from going to school if the school didn't want to take you. And so most children were in institutions. I mean, the reason you didn't see people grow, you know, decades ago, we talk about, well, where were all the children then? Why didn't we see anybody with autism? It's because they were really in institutions. And, you know, this organization and parents fought to change the laws to get them, allow them into school. And once they were able to change the laws, there, you didn't need the institutions in the same way also, because there was a place for children to learn. Society at the time thought people with autism and any kind of developmental disability were ineducable.
We're talking right now with Karen Zucker. She's a producer and journalist for ABC News, and we're talking about her new book with John Donvan. It's called In a Different Key, The Story of Autism.
And we want to know what you think. How do you think attitudes and acceptance of autism have changed over the years? What happened to help you better understand autism? And if you've been through maybe that roller coaster of different diagnoses, supposed causes over the years, what was your experience like? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or post on the Central Time Facebook page.
We're talking with Karen Zucker. She's producer and journalist for ABC News and the PBS NewsHour, and she's co-author with John Donvan of a new book called In a Different Key, The Story of Autism.
You can join in at 800-642-1234. Are you part of the story of autism? Do you have this condition? Is it in your family? What is out there that helps you fit into the world? What else would help accommodate your needs or the needs of your family? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also post on the Central Time Facebook page.
And Karen, we're going to fast forward now. In your book, you take a close look at how the movie Rain Man actually brought autism into the public eye, the public consciousness. Here's a clip.
Of course, today's Monday. I always drive the car on Saturday. I never drive on Monday.
What is this? Who is this guy?
I don't know. She jumped into the car.
There, we can jump out.
I'm an excellent driver.
Yeah, that's good. Come on, come on. Why'd you let him get in this car?
He's not a toy. He says he drives this car.
Dad lets me drive slow on the driveway every Saturday. Of course, the seats were originally brown leather. Now they're pitiful red.
Dustin Hoffman there with Tom Cruise in the movie Rain Man. And that was a huge movie. It really kind of changed things for the way people saw autism if they had been seeing it until then. What is your take, Karen, on how that movie did?
Well, we think that what happened was people only thought of individuals with autism as people who, you know, would knock their heads against a wall and rock incessantly and be completely disconnected from the world. And what Rain Man did is it showed people that there was another dimension to people with autism, and that they were more related than someone who was completely disconnected from the world. But it also gave them a peek in, which I would say to somebody who had more classic autism, somebody who would need support for their entire lives. But the public hadn't seen anything like this before. Everything they'd seen before was, you know, were stories that had nothing to do with what autism really looked like. And Dustin Hoffman really took on this character. It was a breakthrough for people having a new understanding of autism. But at the same time, you know, the autism spectrum is so huge that the type of autism that Dustin Hoffman portrayed, you know, is only one type almost of autism.
So do you think people came away thinking, you know, this was what an autistic person looked like from that?
Right, right. But in some ways, because there was nothing out there, at least there was a starting point for people to see and be able to talk about it, and the conversation got started about autism, a conversation that was really not out there at the time. There's two things that really made autism famous, we think. And one of them was Rain Man, and the other was the fear of vaccines.
Right, and we're going to get to that in just a moment. I want to take a caller first. We've got Jamie with us in West Bend. Jamie, hi.
Hi.
What did you want to share?
Well, my son has autism, my going to be 8-year-old. And like I said I just want to say be an advocate for your child. I had to go through a lot of specialists who told me there's nothing wrong with your son. His dad and I had to stand up and fight for him. You have to be a voice. You're the only one that can, you know, do anything for your child. Your child doesn't have a voice of their own.
Jamie, thank you so much for calling. I appreciate that. And Karen, what do you say to that, the role of parents in advocating for their kids?
Well, I can tell you that we would not be where we are today if it wasn't for parental advocates and educators and researchers who put themselves out there to, you know, share and fight for things that families with autism need. I mean, you have to, you know, there are many children out there that don't have a voice. There are also people who have autism who are self-advocates and can speak for the struggles that they have. But for those who don't have a voice, the parents are key. And the thing that's very challenging about that is, you know, parents don't live forever, and children become adults. And what we have not figured out in a very big way is what happens when children with autism become adults and their parents aren't there, and we don't have the support structure in place to help adults with autism.
Jamie, thanks a lot for the call. And Karen, let's get to that anti-vaccination movement. Now, that took off in the late 90s. There was a paper published by a British researcher named Andrew Wakefield. And tell us again what his theory initially, it's been debunked, but what was that theory and why did it have so much pull?
Well, he believed that the MMR, the triple vaccine, was causing autism. And his theory was totally debunked by the medical community. But what happened was, is it gave, you know, it wasn't crazy for a parent in the 90s to think, you know, my child seemed perfectly normal and they get this shot and now they have autism. But what we did in this country is we did study after study after study after study, and what we came up with was that vaccines don't cause autism. And so it was something that, you know, as a society, we need to move on from. But there are some parents that still just, you know, believe that. And you can't, if someone doesn't believe in science, it's very hard to change their opinion.
There are people who still ascribe to that theory today. Where is that movement? Is it moved off to the fringes of society?
It's not as large as it was, but it is what got people interested in autism, because now they were afraid. They were afraid that could this happen to my child? It is not as prominent, you know, a theory for people, parents, as it was, because the research has been done. And we like to just sort of say, you know, we weren't sure. We researched it as a society. We know that it didn't cause it, and we need to move on.
Talking to Karen Zucker right now, producer and journalist for ABC News and PBS NewsHour. She's got a new book out with John Donovan looking at a comprehensive history of autism. It's called In a Different Key, The Story of Autism. And today, we've got a cognitive diversity movement, neurodiversity, a broader understanding of what autism is. And you've got people out there like Temple Grandin. She has autism herself. She's front and center talking about the gifts that come with autism. How have efforts like that changed things?
Well, in some ways, the neurodiversity movement is, you know, teaching the world that being different is a good thing, and being different should be accepted. There are, you know, just like any group of people, sometimes there are extremes on either end. And the extreme end of the neurodiversity movement really feels that, well, that you should not look to cure or treat autism, that this is the way the person is and you need to figure out how to deal with them. But they also believe, you know, in the greatest sense, that we need to embrace people who are different and to not try to change them and just try to accept who they are. The problem is that there are people who still are severely disabled. They still are banging their heads against the wall. They cannot, you know, feed themselves or do anything independently. And the neurodiversity movement, you know, doesn't think that we should be doing anything to cure that. And so that's the conflict when you look at the two extremes. But at the heart and soul of the neurodiversity movement, it's what we all want for anyone who's different, which is just embrace people for who they are, not who they aren't.
And as we wrap up, your book paints an evolution toward a world where we see autism as a difference rather than a disability. Are we getting there?
You know, we're taking tiny steps. I don't know how much time we have left, but at the end of the book, we tell this story about this guy on a bus who was pretty disabled. He had autism, and he was walking, and he didn't have any language, and he was, you know, using his hands in front of his face, and he was starting to make some noise, and he was irritating the people sitting behind him. And this one guy just got sick of hearing the noises and said, hey, you know, why don't you shut up? Just shut up already. And this other passenger sitting across the way rised up and said, hey, he's got autism. What's your problem? Why don't you shut up, and why don't you get off the bus? And the whole bus stood up behind this gentleman to support the young man who had autism. And so it shows us that there is a way to make a difference, and we're starting to, and people are starting to embrace people who are different without being told to.
That's a great place to leave it. Karen, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
That was Karen Zucker. She's a producer and journalist for ABC News and the PBS NewsHour. She talked with us there about her new book with John Donovan called In a Different Key, The Story of Autism.